Macabre misfortune.
I'm watching you.
Hey guys, and welcome to episode 96 of Macabre Misfortunes. I'm Jerry.
And I'm Tracy.
Tracy, this is a story every once in a while we pop up and do one of these music tragedies. And today is one of those episodes.
Okay.
Randy Rhoads was one of the absolute best guitarists to ever live. I don't think you'll find hardly anybody to dispute that. And we're going to learn a little bit about Randy tonight. But we're going to focus more on his death and how that came about. So if you're one of these people who are like, well, I don't like the music episodes, it's not really going to be about music. It's going to be about his death, which is a very interesting situation. So bear with the very first few minutes of the episode, and then the rest of it will be more on that focus.
Sounds good.
Now, Randy was actually born in Santa Monica, California, on December 6th, 1956. He started playing guitar by the age of 10 years old. And his mom was actually a music school teacher.
Oh, cool.
Or a music teacher in school.
Yeah,
she didn't work for a music school. She did
the classes.
Yeah. By his teen years, it was obvious that Randy was a phenom when it came to the guitar. So in 1973, Randy formed a little band by the name of Quiet Riot.
Oh, nice.
He was 17 years old.
Isn't that crazy?
In 1983, Quiet Riot released their breakout album called Metal Health, in which they kind of skyrocketed from that point on because they had hits on that album, Come On, Feel the Noise, Mama, We're All Crazy Now, and Metal Health, which mm-hmm. was the title of the actual album as well. And for those of you who aren't familiar right off by those songs, I'm going to play you some small clips real quick of those three songs. It's not going to be very much, just enough for you to get a taste of it. So. Tracy, the band had success, but they also had all kinds of drama. So the original bassist, gentleman by the name of Kelly Garney, and the lead singer, Kevin DeBrow, were always at each other's throat. Garney was eventually fired from the band for making death threats to DeBrow.
Oh, that's so, not good.
Yeah, that wasn't good at all. So by 1979, we're 6 years in after forming the band, Randy Rhoads began to get tired of all the turmoil in the band. So he auditioned for Ozzy Osbourne's band. He'd gotten wind that Ozzy was a big fan of his guitar.
Uh-huh.
And actually, the bassist that would eventually be the bassist for Ozzy encouraged him to try out for Ozzy. He's the one that said, hey, Ozzy loves you, man. You should go try out for the band.
Well, that's awesome.
And we'll talk way more about that bassist in the future. So Rhoads went in and he auditioned for Ozzy's band. And everything went good. He got hired on And I guess the rest you could say is history. So Rhodes immediately started to incorporate some riffs from old Quiet Riot stuff that really hadn't been released into the music that he was now doing with Ozzy. And this was something that irritated some of the bands in Quiet Riot because some of the band members, because they decided to go ahead and keep going without him.
Oh,
and they're
okay.
Like, but now he's taking these songs.
So did it mesh well with Ozzy's stuff then?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, for example, the main riff to Ozzy's Suicide Solution was originally a secondary riff from a Quiet Riot demo called Force of Habit.
Mm-hmm.
But see, but then the band was like, well, we can't use that demo now because now you've used that riff for one of Ozzy's. But it was stuff that was unreleased anyway.
Well, that has to be annoying, though.
Well, you would think, but let's be honest. He was the band.
Right. Well,
I mean,
yeah.
I mean, Kevin DeBrow obviously was a lead singer that everybody knew and knew the voice and everything, but he was the guitarist and, you know. So Quiet Riot kind of broke up initially because, like I said, he was the band. Then they formed together and they actually toured for decades. And then Kevin DeBrow died 2007, I think, from a cocaine overdose.
Oh, man.
So, and I think they reformed in like 2010 with no original members. But there was a guy that had started it with them in like 1982. So he kind of carried it on. So, but I don't think they're together right now. But anyways, that's kind of the story. So now Randy is with Ozzy Osbourne and he wrote such memorable guitar stuff, like notably Crazy Train, Mr. Crowley, and I think they did three albums together. With Randy on board. But yeah, Randy's guitar work with Ozzy, that's the stuff that catapulted Ozzy. Because Ozzy was in a rough spot when he met Randy Rhoads. He was just coming, just really starting to do the solo stuff. It really wasn't working out for him.
Mm-hmm.
And he was mentally and physically wasn't doing well. A lot of drugs and drinking and all that stuff. And so this was kind of what brought him back.
Good.
From where he was. So they needed each other, to be honest with you. So, Tracy, we're in the early 80s right now, and there were two guitarists that really stood out in the early 80s. That would be, of course, Randy Rhoads, and of course, Eddie Van Halen.
Oh, okay.
It's funny, but the two bands, actually, because they were close to each other, as far as in California, in the late 70s, they both had kind of a friendly rivalry with each other with Quiet Riot and Van Halen. Of course, neither one of them had record deals at the time, and Van Halen eventually signed the first record deal. So they all knew each other. Eddie never really had very good things to say about Randy, though, because he felt like that Randy ripped off a bunch of his techniques and guitar style. You know, because Eddie was the first to do a lot of the stuff that he does, but then Randy would do some of the stuff, like some of the tapping and stuff like that. So Eddie kind of felt like that, and there's some audio out there you can look it up of him pretty much saying he was just copying him and he needs to learn his own techniques and all that stuff. So that's kind of the way that went. But like I said, we're going to focus on the tragedy of his death. So Randy and Ozzy and the rest of Ozzy's band were on tour in the early part of 1982. After a show in Knoxville, Tennessee on March 18th, the band was traveling to Orlando for a music festival called Rock Super Bowl 14. Now, this has nothing to do with the Super Bowl, actually, but they were listening, you know, calling it the Rock Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a big festival that they'd been doing for years in Orlando. That night on the bus on the way from Knoxville to Florida, Ozzy and Randy would actually have their very last conversation. 25-year-old Randy was getting on Ozzy about his heavy drinking. And he told Ozzy, and I quote, "You'll kill yourself, you know, if you just don't stop. One of these days, yeah, you're going to kill yourself."
Definitely.
Well, after driving most of the night, the bus stopped at a place called Flying Baron Estates in Leesburg, Florida.
Okay.
A place we've been several times. They stopped because they were going to fix a malfunctioning air conditioner and they wanted to do it while Ozzy was sleeping.
Okay. Or passed out.
Yeah. This was about an hour from Orlando, and the property was owned by the Calhoun Brothers Tour Bus Company, which I believe was the tour bus company that was operating the bus they were on.
Okay.
On this property was also a small airstrip with some small planes and a helicopter. The tour bus driver was a man by the name of Andrew Eichock. Now, he was also a pilot. They woke up early that morning, the following morning, and like I said, most of the people in the bus were still asleep, but some of the members were up. Well, Eichock decided that without permission, he was going to go out and grab one of the small planes that were on the runway.
Yeah.
So he asked keyboardist Don Airey and tour manager Jack Duncan if they wanted to go up, and the two said, yeah, that sounds cool.
That's crazy.
So they went on up for a flight. Well, on this trip, Eichock buzzed the bus with the intention of trying to wake up the drummer, Tommy Aldridge. So, and by buzzing, obviously, we mean get really close to it.
Yeah, right.
On the second trip, he decided he was going to take Randy and makeup artist Rachel Youngblood. We're going to talk a little more about that later. But Randy tried to get bassist Rudy Sarzo to come along. Rudy was the gentleman that convinced him to audition for Ozzy. Mm-hmm. And then eventually became the bassist for Ozzy. So they ended up together.
So nobody by this time had still seen him flying a plane he wasn't supposed to be flying?
I don't think there was anybody that cared that was on property. It was still early in the morning, and
yeah,
I don't know if those planes were just left there and until the, you know, whoever needed them or whatever.
No, oh, that's weird.
Ozzy at this time was still asleep on the bus, and then, like I said, Randy tried to get bassist Rudy Sarzo to come along, and Sarzo said, "No, I just want to get some extra sleep," so he went in there and went back to bed. On the flight, there were several attempts to buzz the tour bus. Eichock made two successful attempts with two very close passes. But on that third attempt, at 10 a.m., after being in the air for about 5 minutes, one of the wings clipped the bus. This broke the wing into two different parts and sent the plane spiraling out of control. The initial impact with the bus caused Randy and Rachel's head to both crash through the plane's windows.
Aww.
The plane then severed the top of a pine tree. It then crashed into a garage of a nearby mansion, bursting into flames. All three on board were killed instantly. Their bodies were burned beyond recognition. Rhodes was only identified by his dental records and his personal jewelry.
Wow. That was really unnecessary.
It was. And Tracy, there's still way more to this story. So let's take a quick sponsor break, and I'll be back to tell you what else happened. All right, Tracy, according to Sharon Osbourne, who was not married to Ozzy at the time, they were fiancé, but she was on the bus.
She was on the bus?
Yes, she was on the bus. She was asleep. She said, "They were all in bits. It was just body parts everywhere."
Oh.
Keyboardist Don Airey, who went up on that first trip, was the only member of the band to witness the crash. He reported a struggle between Randy and Eichock seconds before the crash. How does he know that? Because he actually had his camera out. and was taking pictures of the plane to give to Randy afterwards, because I think Randy had requested it.
Okay.
He had his telephoto lens on so he could be able to see.
Oh, zoom in.
Zoom in. And he could tell that there was some sort of a struggle going on board the plane. He said the wings were rapidly tipping from side to side, and at one point, the plane was almost perpendicular, no more than 6 feet off the ground.
So you mean he caught them, like, scuffling it around before yes. the wing came off?
Yes. Yes. And I'll have a theory on that when we get to the end, because you'll see where this might kind of tie in. He said at one point, like I said, when the plane became perpendicular, it was only 6 feet off the ground. That's when he put the camera down and he saw the plane right in front of him. He had to quickly crouch to avoid getting hit. He then looked over his shoulder and watched it clip the bus and then crash into the tree and explode on the impact into the garage. Now, as the band members on board the bus tried to figure out what the hell just happened, Sarzo, the bassist, remembers sidestepping broken glass in his bare feet and looking through a gaping hole in the bus, only to see their tour manager, Jake Duncan. He was rocking back and forth on the ground, screaming, "They're gone, they're gone." Drummer Tommy Aldridge grabbed a fire extinguisher from the bus and started to run towards the wreckage in a vain attempt to try to help out.
Yeah.
But obviously there was nothing he was going to be able to do. Now, Jake Duncan, the tour manager who was rolling on the ground we were talking about, he was on that first trip. He said he was a little concerned about the pilot's behavior, but it was just more of something that seemed so innocent that he didn't think anything was going to happen, you know, with him buzzing the plane and stuff like that.
So he just basically thought he was just having fun.
Right, and he didn't think anything would come out of it. Now, here's the kicker to all this. Randy was afraid of flying and originally had no intention of getting on that plane. But after that first flight landed, Icock said that he was going to take Rachel Youngblood mm-hmm. up for a ride. Rachel had a heart condition. So Icock assured everybody that he was going to take it easy. They were just going to circle the property a few times and not pull any crazy stunts. When Randy heard that, he decided he was going to join them so he could get some aerial shots with his camera.
Mm-hmm.
And Tracy, that's why I think there was a struggle, because it was obvious he was going to try to buzz these things. Oh, and he'd already promised. One, Randy wouldn't have liked it because he was already afraid of filing.
Sure.
Of flying. And then he had promised, because of that, Rachel had a heart condition, that he wasn't going to do it. Yeah. So I'm sure he was probably looking out for her as well. That's probably when he probably started to go in. That's probably where Randy started reaching. It's like, no, level the stuff back out or whatever the situation is. So that's what I think.
So you think that is what caused the wreck then?
I don't know if that's what caused the wreck, but he'd already buzzed it twice. And I think he could have just got too close, but I don't know if that's what caused it or not, but I do think that's probably what caused the scuffle, was the fact that they were just tired of him doing that.
Yeah, that's not cool.
So after the crash, the remaining band and crew were forced to remain in Leesburg for two additional days. Randy's brother-in-law actually had to come in from California to identify the remains. I don't know why they would need somebody to come in and identify remains when...
when they knew who was on it.
Well, not just that. How's he going to tell if the body's burnt beyond recognition?
Well, I thought you said because of his jewelry.
Well, they did know about a jewelry. And maybe that's what it was. Maybe they just wanted him to identify yeah. the jewelry. That would probably make sense. But they wouldn't, you know, they had to use dental records and stuff like that.
What a horrible thing to happen.
In case you're curious, Ozzy was on the bus. He was awoken by the loud explosion. And he said he immediately thought that the bus had hit a vehicle on the road. Mm-hmm. That's what it was. And he got out of a bed, and he started screaming for Sharon to get off the bus, but Sharon was already getting people off the bus, as typical Sharon Osbourne fashion.
Of course.
She's on top of it. And after getting off the bus, he saw that the plane had crashed, but he didn't know who was on the plane. And then when he found out it was his people, he was devastated.
Oh, can you imagine? Oh, my gosh. I just don't understand. I mean, if he had just done what he said he was going to do.
Yep.
Then none of that would have happened. Hey, or if he just hadn't got on somebody's plane and flown it,
Now, see, I've heard stories in the past, and to be honest with you, I didn't see it when I was, I couldn't see it enough to confirm it, but I had heard stories before that the guy had been drinking, and maybe that might have had something to do with it, but I didn't see anything that confirmed that the guy had been drinking.
Right, but I can't imagine that those two would want to get on the plane if he'd been drinking.
You wouldn't think, but, you know, who knows? They could have been drinking and stuff, too, so I don't know. It was early in the morning, so it didn't.
That's a very unfortunate thing.
But anyway, that's the story of Randy Rhoads.
I'm sorry.
And you know, it's strange. They've been trying to do, there's people that's tried to put out a Randy Rhoads documentary for years. Mm-hmm. But Ozzy, there's very little footage. If you look up Randy Rhoads online, there's not a lot of footage of Randy playing. Not with Ozzy. And Ozzy, pretty much his camp has refused to release any of that video and stuff. He's got videos and stuff, but he just refuses to release it for there to be a proper documentary made. So
nobody's really... Well, maybe because of the family or something.
Well, I mean, I think the family would like to have something done. I mean, this is one of the greatest musicians out there, and there's hardly anything anybody can find out about him. So I think his family wants it done, and I think they're pushing to have Ozzy release it. But
I didn't know that.
So, yeah, but years, I mean, they've been trying for 20 years to get Ozzy release this stuff.
Yeah, looks like they're running out of town or time because old Ozzy...
Yeah.
He's barely hanging in there himself, I think.
So anyways, that's the story. I hope you guys, I know a lot of people know that he died and died in a plane crash, but there's a lot of details.
Oh, yeah. I had no clue.
People realize. So. Oh, 25 years old.
Sad, sad. What year did you say it was in the 80s?
82.
Yeah.
So. All right, guys. We love you and we'll talk to you later.
Bye. Love you guys.